welcome to the Tom and Curly Show. Tom Tangney here. John Curly off today. He'll be back next week on Monday. Dre's filling in from L.A. So, Dre's, it looks like the official numbers, the unofficial official numbers, will be 306 to 232. Those are the electoral vote counts for both Joe Biden and Donald Trump. I don't know if it's ironic or not, but it's the exact same numbers that Donald Trump defeated Hillary Clinton by, 306 to 232 votes. The reason I'm saying that, I think the AP still hasn't called Georgia, but the other media organizations last night called Arizona. Then today they called Georgia for Joe Biden and also called North Carolina for the president. So 306 to 232. I haven't heard you since the election. Dre's, what's your kind of overall take on the election, and what do you make of Georgia and Arizona being flipped by Joe Biden, of all people?
Well, first off, I really, man, I want a slow clap right now. Just, I want this thing to, I need him to not just lose. I need him to lose badly, right? You know, I'm smiling inside if I'm honest with you. But yeah. Honestly, seeing Arizona flip is crazy, right? It's like, okay, places like that, when you see them start to get the message and start to change and start to really make a statement that, yo, this isn't okay, right? We've always, politics in America has always been polarizing, right? Mm-hmm. But this is the type of stuff that it gets to the core of who do we want to be? And leadership matters. And you start seeing things in our country that are weird where you're going, yo, man, like, yo, we're really taking steps back in 4 years. Like, this is crazy. And then when it comes to Atlanta, I love Georgia turning. Shout out to Atlanta. Shout out to Stacey Abrams. Yes, to everybody down there. Black votes matter. I was most passionate about the fact that as African Americans, I think this is the first election where we really get the fact that our vote matters, right? Biden wouldn't have even been the Democratic nominee if it wasn't for us, and he definitely would not have won if it wasn't for us. So I'm excited because as African Americans, we get the fact that, hey, we got power too. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we pulled up to the table and said, you know what? You don't got to pull out my chair. I'll pull it out myself. I'll have a seat at the table and join the conversation.
So okay,
what about
so
you?
That's,
what are your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, the thing is that I've been talking about it nonstop, it feels like, since the election. To be honest, I think most people that think like I do or like you do, I think we were surprised that Trump did as well as he did.
Yeah.
I think I more or less, I mean, we were all suspicious of polls, and polls are only a snapshot in time and all this kind of stuff. But the fact that he could still, given, and people who listen to the show know, I mean, John voted for Trump both times. I'm appalled that he did. And so people know my political take on this. But to think that 72 million people, despite everything that he had done in the last 4 years, he still got that many votes. That caught me up short, and it does convince me that it's not just Trump. See, I think from a liberal's point of view, you look at Trump and you just feel like he's like the worst kind of Republican. I mean, he's like, Republicans aren't really like that. I mean, they've been, I've been a liberal all my life, and I've always fought in a kind of respectful balance, Republicans or conservatives. And that's just, I sort of understand that game. And when somebody who plays so far outside the boundaries or rules, it really catches me up short. And I thought of his election as kind of something of a fluke that, I think a lot of people didn't like Hillary Clinton for whatever reason. And so they said, well, you know, how bad could it be? And I thought the lesson would be, wow, that can really be bad, but I'm wrong. And so as much as I personally dismiss Donald Trump as a serious a figure at all in the history of America, the fact that he got that many votes makes me, you know, come up short. It means I do not say that 72 million people are racist. I might think that he has all sorts of racist tendencies, but I think that there must be other reasons why he appeals to people besides what I think are his worst characteristics, which is to appeal to the basest of our energies. And that's kind of my overall general take, that I need to take the results seriously enough that I just don't dismiss it as a kind of a liberal who lives in a Seattle bubble.
Well, see, I don't consider myself either Republican or Democrat. So to me, there's crazies on both sides, right?
Okay.
So the far left is crazy and the far right is crazy. They just don't know it. They're comfortable with their own crazy. For me, it's literally, how do you want to die? Do you want to die with a rope around your neck, or do you want to die death by a thousand cuts? Both parties are not loving me. Not much changes for African Americans in this country based upon the differing parties. The truth is, yes, you're right. Trump literally magnified something I've been saying for years, which is that, hey, this country's racist on both sides. Well, no, it's not. Yes, it is. We're doing better. No, not really. Right? And so, no, he didn't create racism. He literally put some gasoline on a fire that's already been there. Trump could not make 70 million people racist. And I don't think everyone who voted for him is racist. I think there are tons of other reasons to vote. I will, however, say the fact that you're willing to elevate that is white privilege, right? The ability to say, well, I can move that issue second to the economy, or I can move racism second to something else because it doesn't impact me. That is the privilege of knowing, hey, this doesn't impact me. Why would I be worried about it? I do, however, in this moment, think what is shocking to me on the right is, like, you guys on the right, and I don't mean you, but they claim to be such patriots. I mean, everything is, I mean, you know, don't take a knee and salute the flag, and it's about the soldiers and gun rights and all of this, but none of them, not the way they need to in chorus, are standing up against Trump right now. It makes no sense. They are not even, it's not even party and country over everything. It's Trump over everything. I expect this from him, but it's shame on you to the rest of them. I'm just like, there's not one real American over there. Like, where's the guy who's like, okay, show's over, Trump. You know what I mean? Call Biden, concede, and let's keep this party going. My thoughts.
Fair enough. Well, I don't want to be the one to tamp down your enthusiasm, but let me throw this out as a possible tamp down. How do you feel like the senatorial races in Georgia, a newly Democratic electoral college state, how do you think the Democrats will now do in a non-election, you know, non-presidential election? Because I'm pessimistic. So from the liberal or Democratic point of view. I think they'll both go Republican.
So this may shock you, but I think the Democrats will do fine because I think the Republicans are in disarray, right? And the fact that they're unwilling to step up against Trump and really just be authentic and American and do the right thing, at some point that starts to impact your brand and people just step up to it. However, I do want to say, I'm not rooting for the Democrats to win. I would rather the Republicans win down there in Georgia.
Wow, so I think the Democrats really? Explain yourself.
Well, okay, in general, I will be honest in saying I'm not tapped into Georgia like daily. How did the senator vote and what are they doing every day?
You're
no,
not.
I don't follow all 50 states, right? I tap in with Washington and California, but I don't all 50 states. I will, however, say, I think balance is important. I do not. I think there are crazies on the right, crazies on the left. I think Trump raises some very real concerns, right? It is very peculiar that 5 days after the election, oh, guess what? We've got a vaccine. It'll be ready really soon, right? It's just, and the whole time he's been saying, hey, man, this is what the left is going to do. So if you're on the right, you can call out the left's crazy and it makes sense to you. If you're on the left, you can see they're crazy. It makes sense to you. I'm neither. I look back and I go, both of y'all are crazy. Not everyone, right? Most Democrats and most Republicans that I know are really good people, but they allow the nut jobs in their party to yell the loudest, to grab the steering wheel and drive the entire party off of a cliff. And the rest of us with him.
Well, good. I feel like for a while there, we were turning into the progressive hour. I now know that there are, you know, some boundaries the show can stay within. And also then, that's kind of a perfect entree. There's lots of things I'd like to say about both Georgia and Arizona. I do think that's, a wave of the future, and maybe Texas is moving in that direction as well. But because you brought up the vaccine business, and I think you personally are nuts if you believe this, it's a conspiracy theory about the release. But on that score, I think let's hear from. So we, as I mentioned at the very top of the show today, that we heard for, there was like radio silence for an entire week from the president, which is unbelievable. Sure, he was loud on Twitter, but he hadn't, made any kind of public pronouncements. Well, today he came out. It wasn't a press conference. He didn't take any calls, but he did come out and speak, make a statement. And again, he took some credit, and I don't begrudge him that, for this vaccine. So let's hear him today. This is in the Rose Garden. He talked about the Pfizer vaccine. You just mentioned it.
As a result of Operation Warp Speed, Pfizer announced on Monday that its China virus vaccine is more than 90% effective. This far exceeds any and all expectations. Nobody thought they'd get to that level. In July, my administration reached an agreement with Pfizer to provide $1.95 billion to support the mass manufacturing and distribution of 100 million doses. Pfizer said it wasn't part of Warp Speed, but that turned out to be an unfortunate misrepresentation. They are part. That's why we gave them the $1.95 billion, and it was an unfortunate mistake that they made when they said that.
Okay, I don't know if you're if you've been following the news that closely, but when this came out and there were suspicions like you raised, hey, you know, Pfizer, why'd you wait until after the election? Pfizer said, first off, we didn't wait. We got it. We had a meeting on Sunday, which was the first time we could clear this kind of stuff. Pence immediately took credit for the Pfizer vaccine by saying, hey, congratulations, Operation Warp Speed. And then Pfizer came out and says that we weren't part of Warp Speed. Well, they weren't part of they didn't get any money from Warp Speed for the investigation of the vaccine, the development of the vaccine. That's the distinction they were making. What the White House is trying to take credit for, and I don't begrudge them this. Had set up an arrangement with Pfizer that if that vaccine comes to fruition, here's a supply chain that the government will help, distribute your vaccine. And so that's the little quibble. Let's play a couple more clips from him, by the way, so we can talk about the vaccine if you want. But also, this is the closest. So everyone was wondering, is he going to acknowledge that he is on the way out or not? This is the closest he got, the president, to acknowledging there might be another administration taking over next year.
While healthy Americans have gone back to work and to school, we continue to spare no expense to protect the elderly and the vulnerable. According to some estimates, a national lockdown costs $50 billion a day and hundreds of thousands of jobs every single day. Ideally, we won't go to a lockdown. I will not go. This administration will not be going to a lockdown. Hopefully, the whatever happens in the future, who knows which administration it will be. I guess time will tell. But I can tell you this administration will not go to a lockdown. There won't be necessity. Lockdowns cost lives, and they cost a lot of problems.
Okay, he almost caught himself saying, there won't be a lockdown under my, and there won't be one, I'm hoping, when, never mind, I might still be here. So he's inching up to the edge of acknowledgement, but I can't quite get there. And then finally, this last one on cases spiking, then I'll let you just say something, Dres. This is what he had to say about the cases now spiking pretty much all across the country.
Case levels are high, but a lot of the case levels are high because of the fact that we have the best testing program anywhere in the world. We've developed the most and the best tests, and we test far more than any other country. So it shows, obviously, more cases.
Okay, your reaction to any of that? The president taking some credit and also kind of don't worry about the details here. It's we're all in good shape.
I won't worry about him taking credit. That's just walking bag of pride. I just can't. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter what happens. He's going to take credit for it. You know what I mean? When he beats Hillary Clinton, it's, I beat her 232-306. It was amazing. It's never been anything like it. Well, what happens when you lose 232-306? Right?
Jury's still
not
out.
So amazing. Well, right. But I just. the best part of that, it's comical. At this point, I just want to watch Hitler crumble. I want to watch this process of him walking up to almost admitting he lost. Oh, that was so awesome. He didn't even know what to do. At this point, he's always been a sideshow. He's making himself more of one. But that is hilarious because you can literally hear that he's basically saying there's another administration coming. I hope that means that there'll be some sort of conceding coming because we cannot afford to take the country through, you know what I mean? Like what he makes me know. I don't even know what's possible with him. He throws some loop. You're like, whoa, who saw that coming?
So I think the perfect out for him is when he does step aside. I have a hard time imagining him, greeting the traditional president greeting on the steps of the White House, the new president, and then riding in the limousine for the inauguration. I find it hard to imagine that, but so he might not get that far. But I think he will go, and he'll go begrudgingly, maybe. But I do think that when he announces if he is going to relent. That he announces his 2024 campaign start that very moment. I think that'll be a way for him to, we'll fight on and leave this stage semi-nobly. That would be my guess, at least. Okay, Trace, thanks for that. Tracy Taylor, The Roads. It's actually been a gorgeous afternoon for the most part around here. This hour, the Tom and Curley Show, is brought to you by KeelMortgage.com. That's KeelMortgage.com, bringing you this 3 o'clock hour of the Friday edition of the Tom and Curley Show. I'm Tom Tangney. John Curley is away today, and filling in from L.A., no less, is the one and only Drays. Welcome aboard again, Drays.
How you doing, Tom?
Pretty good. Well, this is perfect that you're here with us today because this is one of our favorite segments that we do all week. It's the Behind Enemy Lines version where we go behind enemy lines and talk to someone representing the opponent of the Seattle Seahawks. This will be a little stripped down version because our sound effects guy, John Curley, is away. But that'll just give us more time to talk about football. And without further ado, let's introduce Travis Rogers to our show. He's the Rams pregame, halftime, and postgame host for ESPN LA. Welcome, Travis.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Fantastic. Listen, I think, I could be wrong, but I think this is the first time all season the Seahawks are listed as underdogs, and I think with pretty good reason. What's the LA Ram take on the Seattle Seahawks in this upcoming game on Sunday?
Well, I think it's probably pretty similar to everybody's take on the Seahawks right now, which is Russell Wilson is amazing, and he's a problem, and DK Metcalf is from another planet, and you don't know how to stop him. Yeah. And that being said, I think we're going to score 40 points this week because there's nobody on the other side of the ball that seems to be able to stop anybody. So that's kind of what the take as I see it right now going in. You know, the offense is very, very scary, but there certainly feels like there's some opportunities against that D.
Well, yeah. In fact, I think just you look at the rankings, and the rankings are always a little less suspicious, but I think the Seahawks right now still have the best rated offense. And of course, the Rams with that scary Aaron Donald have the best, the number one defense. If you think you're going to score 40 points, how well do you think Russell Wilson is going to do against your number one rated defense? 40 to what?
Yeah, well, we'll see, I guess. You know, it's funny you mentioned because I think that's one of the most compelling matchups in the entire league. Never mind, they always compare quarterbacks to quarterbacks and those sorts of things.
Right.
But you just said it. Aaron Donald against Russell Wilson is A-plus theater. I mean, every single time he goes back to pass, it feels like Aaron Donald is within an inch or two of being able to get his hands on him.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be a super crazy high scoring game to be serious for a second. I think that the Rams will score, but the Rams offense has been kind of inconsistent. The Rams have won games this year because that defense is really, really good. So I think if either one of these two teams gets to 30, they probably win.
Huh.
Now you were talking about defense, and I feel like you took one or two shots at our defense, but that's okay. When it comes to I want to know what does one Jalen Ramsey, what would he say about DK? Is there any fear in a Jalen Ramsey about going up against him?
Well, Jalen Ramsey would certainly say no because that's how Jalen Ramsey rolls, right? You know, Jalen Ramsey doesn't give you an inch. He's a very tough competitor, and he's an incredible football player. But, yeah, I mean, DK Metcalf is terrifying. I mean, when you see a guy that size, that fast, run down Buda Baker like he did a few weeks ago, I mean, you just can't help but be blown away. He's just such a powerful presence. He seems to have developed a real rapport with Russ right out of the chute. So he's a scary guy. Now, that being said, I haven't seen too many teams decide to throw the ball to the side of the field that Jalen Ramsey's on. When he's out there, he can really take guys away. We've only seen a couple of teams run at him so far this season. They haven't had much success. He's been as good as advertised. He doesn't get a ton of stats because nobody throws his way, but he just takes away half the field. He's not quite Deion Sanders, but he's one of those guys that certainly can change your game plan.
Yeah, now, that's, I mean, just a second. Richard Sherman was a lot that way, too. Sometimes his stats weren't as great as the Legion of Boom because no one ever threw in his direction. Go ahead, Dres.
Sure.
So then, just to poke a hole just a little bit in the Rams. So I'm looking at who you guys have beat this year. The Cowboys, the Eagles, the Giants, Chicago, and Washington. Right? Not exactly the best teams in the league. Is there the good teams you guys have played, Buffalo, Miami, and the Niners you guys have lost to. Is there any narrative amongst the Rams that, hey, maybe this team hasn't really showed up against good teams yet?
Well, I think that's the fairest criticism against this team. I really do. You're right. There is no snappy comeback to you've beat the worst division in football 4-0 and the Bears. I mean, those are not great wins. Those are not – any of those stand-up Bears records is okay, but you look at what those teams have done, they're just not very good. Like you mentioned, Miami – looks to be pretty good. Buffalo is very good. San Francisco's banged up, division rival, but the three games you go into saying, I don't know what's going to happen, they've lost all three. It's a very fair criticism, and you know, until they beat somebody like Seattle or Arizona, and they get Tampa in a couple of weeks, until they beat somebody like that, that's going to be the criticism against them, and it's fair.
You guys did get chopped against Buffalo, though, don't you think? Wasn't that the game where there was that bogus call?
Yeah. Here's the thing. Yes, you are 100% right. It was against Darius Williams, and they called PI, and it wasn't. Yeah. That being said, a couple of years ago, the Rams went to the Super Bowl for a PI call that went the other way. It was probably pretty bad.
So fair is fair.
It's going to be a minute before you hear me complain about a bad call and pass interference.
Okay, so we've heard you, sing the praises of Russell Wilson. We'll take all the praise, but I'm sure it hasn't escaped notice that in two games, the three games ago and last game, he's had seven turnovers. Do you think that teams have figured out and found a chink in our shining knight's armor?
I'll use the same defense on Russell Wilson that I've used on Jared Goff a handful of times. I think when you fall behind and you know you have to score 30-plus points to win a game, you got to take some chances. You got to do some things that you wouldn't otherwise do. You mentioned the Legion of Boom a few minutes ago. When those guys were at their best, they didn't ask Russ to do a whole lot other than make a play here or there, not make any big mistakes, don't throw the ball to the other team, and he was great at it. But now that he knows he's got to go out there and light it up and score 30-plus points, maybe 40-plus points to win a game, you're going to throw some picks if you do that. It's just there's no way to put up numbers like that, score points like that, if you don't throw an interception once in a while.
Yeah, I mean, and when you think of quarterbacks, what is it about the Rams that it seems like the offense just isn't what it once was, right? Is it Sean McVay's play calling different, or has the league caught up? Is it that Jared Goff is just really not a sexy quarterback? Why doesn't the Ram offense look like that juggernaut that it looked like a few years ago when we were all afraid? Because some of the same guys are there. Woods is there. Cooper Kupp is there, right? I mean, Gurley's not there, but what is it? What has happened to the Rams' offense?
Well, I think it's a little bit of the first couple of things you said. I think it's just a little bit of familiarity with Sean McVay's scheme. You know, I think that now we're in that point where McVay probably needs to counter move back. I think there's a little bit of that. But the obvious answer is the right one, is that Todd Gurley's not here. And Todd Gurley was here last year, but he wasn't the Todd Gurley that he was the year before. He is a really special guy. And when he's healthy and doing what he can do at his best, there are not too many people like him. I mean, I'm sure you guys remember, a couple of years ago, Todd Gurley went up to Seattle and just ran through everybody. I mean, he was an unstoppable force in that game, and that's where it felt like he was on the verge of maybe getting an MVP. He didn't go for him like that, but he had a massive game. Really, since the NFC Championship game a couple of years ago, when he disappeared, and then in the Super Bowl he was nowhere, and then all last season he really was ineffective. That's when the offense, air quotes, changed a little bit. It's because one of the best players in the league was no longer on the offense. That's what changed. They had a dynamic guy that wasn't dynamic anymore. And as good as Darrell Henderson might be, as good as Cam Akers might be, there's just not a lot of guys that can do what Gurley did.
Okay, Travis, we always wrap up the Behind Enemy Lines with this same question. Now, if John was here, it involves using a frying pan to knock a Seahawks player over the head and, you know, switching him out of uniforms. But basically, the question is, if you could take any one player on the Seahawks and put him in a Rams uniform and use him in the game, which Seahawk would you be most apt to take?
I would take Russell Wilson because I think he's just the second guy. I think he's the second best quarterback in the league behind Pat Mahomes. I just think I've covered since the Rams have come back to Los Angeles. I've either attended or been or watched every single snap that they've had. The one guy that gives you the most anxiety out of everybody, and they've played against Mahomes, they've played against Tom Brady, they've played against Aaron Rodgers and all these different guys. Every time Russell Wilson touches the ball, you think something terrible is going to happen to you. It is just a really sinking feeling that every time he has the ball, you think he's going to do something to your guy. So I would like to have that feeling on my side of the ball. That's an easy one for me.
And then just finally, you want to give us a final score? Give us a projection.
I'll say 31-24 Rams.
Okay, that sounds reasonable to me. Dre's, you want to object?
Yeah, there's no way they're holding us to 24 points. Are you kidding me? No chance.
I'd like to introduce you to Mr. Aaron Donald.
Aaron Donald. Hey, please don't. Please don't. Okay, Travis, fantastic. Thanks a lot. Good luck to you, Rams. I just hope that the Seahawks have a little better luck. But again, thanks for being in Behind Enemy Lines.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Travis. Okay, and that's great. I can hear Tracy's music. Take it away. You are listening to the Tom and Curly Show. Tom Tangney here, John Curly away today. Dre's filling in. So, Dre's, there was an interesting article. Moyer McDonald is a longtime movie reviewer at Seattle Times. I know her quite well. She's also become the arts critic. She's a dance critic, and now she's also the book critic there. And she had this interesting holiday book buying suggestion. I think everybody knows that Amazon, when it was just a wee little thing, was basically an online bookseller. And indie bookstores are now kind of fighting off the big behemoth that Amazon has become, because they not only obviously sell books, they sell the entire world to most of us. And indie bookstores are always trying their best to battle the giant by, you know, giving you personal attention or, you know, the best kind of service they can. Moira's suggestion here is that because of what's going on, booksellers are anticipating shortages and delays in getting shipments. One of the reasons I didn't realize this is that large printing companies are under financial strain. That means fewer books are being printed. If fewer books are being printed, then fewer books are going to distributors, which end up on bookshelves. So her suggestion is, if you are thinking, and I'm one of those people, I love nothing better than getting a book for Christmas, and I love nothing better than giving books for Christmas, that if you are a book holiday shopper, that you ought to get your requests in early, because right now it's going to be tough. Most of the editions that you think you might be able to pick up in the last week before Christmas may already be off the shelves at that time, and you should sign up early to do it now if you have specific titles in mind. Does this have any impact on your life, Dre?
You know what? This was an interesting article because I'm not a book guy like that. I love to read, but I won't buy you a book for Christmas, and please don't buy me a book for Christmas, right? Like, I'm a different guy. Get me some shoes, get me some clothes, get me something else I want. But it was really interesting to see how really the impact of COVID, you don't think about distributors and the idea that, oh, there's a shortage of paper, right? Or the printing company, just all of the ways that one company has to downsize. And then when they close and then when they reopen, all of a sudden they have fewer workers. So how do we get, you know, the same demand out to people? So the suggestion of people being able to buy early is, I love that. That's dope. Even more importantly, because I'm such a small business guy, I'm kind of an Amazon guy now when it comes to books, but this is making me lean and go, all right, well, if you're going to do this, yeah, go to the small guy, buy your book, but you may have to wait in line to get it this
year. Yeah. Hey, by the way, one of the recommendations, they say that one of the books that might be sort of a hot ticket locally is something, I don't know if you are aware of it, called Emerald Street, A History of Hip-Hop in Seattle by Dowdy Abe. Are you aware of that at all?
I'm very aware. I helped out with the book, so I'm aware. So.
Fantastic. Well, at least you could be help promoting your own material. So, well, maybe there'll be a run on that book for Seattleites, Emerald Street. In fact, I may pick that up for myself. A History of Hip Hop in Seattle.